open the House Committee on Business and Labor. I hope we're all having a good interim. Representative Cameron is out of town, and we're waiting for a couple other guys, folks. But first, I think everybody knows everybody around here, but I would like our newest addition to the committee, Representative Foyle, to introduce herself and tell us a little something about herself.
Hi, my name is Representative Val Hoyle. I'm the mother of two children. I work as the director of the 100% Access Healthcare Initiative with the United Way of Lane County, and I was recently appointed to replace Chris Edwards in representing House District 14, which is West Eugene, Junction City, Albador, and Cheshire. And I'm looking forward to working with all of you.
Well, welcome. You've all been presented with a copy of the rules. I don't need to open a work session, do I?
No.
Well, I would entertain a motion to adopt
actually,
the rules.
No, Mr. Chair. We probably should.
Let's
open up the organizational hearing.
I'm going to open up an organizational hearing and
a work session, too?
No, that's all we need.
Okay, and I would entertain a motion to adopt the rules. Representative Esquel moves we adopt the rules. Is there any discussion on the rules or the motion?
Did I think that?
Oh, I thought you were signifying that you are moving.
I do.
So moved. Any discussion on the motion or the rules or the language? I think they're the same as last time. So.
Yeah, then they're the standard language, Mr. Chair, that you've seen before in your previous committee hearings these last couple days.
Seeing no discussion questions, is there any opposition to the rules, the adoption of the rules? All righty then. So moved. And I can put that away. I'm just going to have some information. We'll have some informational hearings. I'm going to call up Ms. Lori Warner and Mr. Tom Byerly from the Employment Department to talk us about unemployment insurance benefits. And just to get going, I will be sponsoring, using my bill for February to extend unemployment insurance benefits here in the state of Oregon if we need to do that. So with that, go ahead and let her rip, Lori. Or whoever goes first.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lori Warner, the director for the Employment Department, and with me is Tom Byerly, the Unemployment Insurance Division Administrator. We're here to talk with you about an unemployment insurance update. There's some slides. I think you have packets in front of you, and we have the overhead here, so we'll start through these. The very first slide here shows you where Oregon sits in terms of unemployment rate. In the country, we have been number 3, we've been number 4, we've been number 5, we've been in the top 5 for about 6 months now across the country. These are the other states that are currently close to us in unemployment rate. So I think that's probably something you've been following too. The next slide is the one that just gives you that picture graphically across the U.S. And I was just at the National Association of Workforce Agencies meeting that was representing all the states across the country. And many of them up there that you'll see have 9, 7 in that range. And those states were very concerned also about unemployment insurance because within their state they had pockets, certain areas that had 10%, 12%, 15% unemployment. So remember, these are average unemployment rates across the state, and many of you may be from districts in Oregon that also have higher than what we are currently at right now at 12.2 in August. So we know that it's a national concern in terms of the unemployment rate across the country. So the next slide is the one that just shows you what Oregon's unemployment rate has done over time. And I think what's most telling and what most people's eye is caught by is if you look at the far right of the graph, you see that very straight up line. So Oregon went from a 5 to 6% unemployment rate just straight up starting in October of last year. So we now have, over the last 4 or 5 months, been in May we were at 12.2. In July, we were at 11.8. In June, we were 11.7. So we've been bumping right there. And then we're back up at 12.2 in August. So we didn't have a lot of relief over the summer where we normally see, you know, significant drops because of seasonal employment. So we have continued to be on that high end. Tom's going to go through here a bunch of slides for you on claims, because we're processing lots of unemployment insurance claims under about four different programs, and some of your constituents we may have been helping figure out where they are and where what they have left. And as you may have been aware, in August and September, we discussed during the session that we would have 4,000 to 5,000 people begin to exhaust all federal benefits, and that is what has occurred. We have about 4,000 to 5,000 people that are out of all federal benefits. So we have passed during the last session Oregon emergency benefits, which will begin October 4th, this coming Sunday. So those folks will move over to those benefits, and we're still waiting and hoping there'll be a federal extension. So I'm going to let Tom run through these slides, and then we'll talk about the trust fund balance, how much money is in our trust fund, and the tax schedules that we're about to set for businesses for beginning in January. So, Tom.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Byerly. I'm the administrator for the Unemployment Insurance Division of the Employment Department. As Lori indicated, this is a slide showing our initial claims workload across all programs. It would include new claims in the regular benefits. It would include new claims for extended benefits and new claims for the emergency unemployment compensation. The solid line is what we've actually done through actually through the end of August. And you can see how the forecast as we go through the end of 2009 through the beginning of 2010, the workload is going to go up significantly. And that increase is partly due to normal seasonal unemployment that we have in Oregon during the wintertime. It's going to be claims that a year ago were filed as the unemployment rate started going up and are now moving on to the federal extension. So there's a whole lot of factors going into that, but you can see we're expecting another pretty significant spike in the initial claims workload. This slide depicts our workload in the continuing claims, the claims that people call in or file each week to get their benefit payment either online or over the telephone. Again, the solid line is the work actually done, and we're expecting another spike before we start going back down to where we were in 2007. We expect a spike at the end of this year, first of next year. During the legislative session, we have been given some limited duration staff that we're going to be putting to use. We're training them right now so we can handle this workload. But suffice to say, we continue to set records each week on the amount of claims that we're paying. I wanted to give an overview as a reminder of the benefits that are available right now in Oregon. Everyone is eligible for 26 weeks of regular benefits when they file their claim. Regular benefits are paid out of the Oregon Trust Fund. Then there's 33 weeks of emergency unemployment compensation. That's 100% federally funded, so we're not paying for any of that. The federal government is. The emergency benefits are extended benefits there. There's 20 weeks of that. Normally that program is shared 50% with the state and funded 50% by the federal government. Right now, with the American Reinvestment or Readjustment Reinvestment Act, we are receiving those monies 100% federally funded as well. So that's been a real boon to us because we're paying in the neighborhood of $51 million a week in unemployment insurance benefits. $26 million of that is coming from the federal government that we're not having to pay out of our trust fund. Then there's the Oregon Emergency Benefits, the 13-week extension that Lori mentioned was passed out of House Bill 3483. That starts next Sunday. And individuals that have exhausted the three programs listed above will be transferred on to the Oregon Emergency Benefits. I have been in close contact with Senator Wyden's staff, who sits on Senate Finance, that has been and will be looking at a possible additional weeks of benefits under the Emergency Unemployment Compensation Program. The latest information I have is they hope to move something from the Senate next week. So if that happens and we do indeed get 13 more weeks of the emergency unemployment compensation, we will pull people off the Oregon emergency benefits and put them back onto the federal benefits so we can save money in our trust fund. Down at the bottom, I listed the Oregon additional benefits because we project to trigger onto that in March of 2011. This is an extension that's been on the books for many, many years, actually since the 80s, and it only comes on when none of the extensions I listed above are available. So it's sort of a late safety valve. We're not paying those benefits now, but I put it on there just as an explanation for what the next chart's going to show. This bar graph shows that the weeks claimed or the continuing claims by benefit program since the last recession in 2002. At the bottom, you'll see the color-coordinated color codes for the type of benefits that we're paying. A telling thing for us to pay attention to, any quarter with an asterisk is actual work. The number signs are forecasted workload, but you can see the regular benefits are even higher than all the programs that we paid back in the last recession. So there's a significant increase in the workload. I was with Lori at the conference last week, and one economist said that the 2008 stock market drop was the third worst in history. I didn't realize it was that bad, but it was third only to 1929, 1930, and 1935-36. So that's led a lot to our workload. Here is a chart of the exhaustions, claimants that are running out of benefits. The blue line are the 26 weeks of regular benefits. The green line are exhaustions, actual and projected for the emergency unemployment compensation extension. And the red line is the extended benefits program. You can see the peak there between August and September of extended benefits. Those are the 4,000 to 5,000 individuals in total through the month. We had a little over 2,000 that one week that Lori mentioned earlier that are out of all unemployment benefits right now. And so they are, if they have not returned to work, they are going without unemployment insurance benefits, and they'll be contacting us early next week to get put on the emergency or the Oregon emergency benefit extension. Oops, sorry about that. This is a slide that we were showing throughout the session, and the green line that's above all the others is calendar year 2009. Those are benefit payments, obviously, by the millions. I want to share some numbers. I'll turn my slides here. To give you an idea of the contrast, I'm just comparing the month of August. Beginning in 2006, we paid $34 million for the whole month. In 2007, for August, we paid $37 million for the entire month, so pretty much on par with 2006. In August of 2007, we were up to $71 million for the month. In August of 2009, we paid $236 million in unemployment benefits this year. We're paying more benefits on a Monday right now than we do the entire month in 2006 and 2007. So we have a lot of people out of work. I wanted to highlight a little bit of the legislation that we worked on with this committee last session. The Senate Bill 462 was the alternate base year. This program allows individuals that were not eligible for benefits under the regular base period of the first four of the last five completed calendar quarters. If they're not eligible under that formula, we can then look at the most recent four completed calendar quarters and validate their claim. Now, we have 2 months of information for July and August, and each month we're averaging about 342 claims that we're validating. Their benefit amount is $135, and it's taking us a little over 13 days to validate those claims. We do have to contact employers that mainly get the wages, so it takes a little bit of time. But these are people that would otherwise not have been eligible for benefits. This represents about 1% of our overall workload. It's not real significant, but they are mostly manual. This bill also set us up for the UI modernization funds that were available through the federal government that we discussed in this committee. We actually got $91 million from the federal government that we put into the trust fund, and Lori will be talking a little bit later how that helped out our trust fund stay where it's at. And here is that trust fund comparison.
So this is the chart that we shared with you at the end of the session about the projection on the trust fund. And if you'll recall, we were talking about in March during the session, we talked about the trust fund balances, and the projection for the tax schedule for January 2010 was tax schedule 5, but then by May, because the unemployment was continuing to climb and we were continuing to pay additional benefits, we updated that and projected we'd be in tax schedule 6. The actual calculation and the tax setting of the tax schedule is in statute, and that is done based on the ending balance of August 31st in the trust fund each year. We calculate that in September, and in October we finalize those numbers, and then first part of November we send out notices to employers telling them what tax schedule they will be in. The calculation work has been done, and we do expect this to be in tax schedule, to remain in tax schedule 6. So for 2010, which is that middle column, that will be the tax schedule for 2010. The things that have changed about this, and we will put this information out officially, is that the ending balance in the trust fund for 2009 will be $100 million less than what is shown here, so 1.4 instead of 1.5, and the margin to the next tax schedule, which is the far right-hand column, will drop down to about $40 million. So we've paid out additional $100 million in benefits. Tom was just speaking to that. And what that will happen was that if you look in the first column on the far left, other than the year, you'll notice the projection on what the ending fund balance is August 31st. If we drop the 2009 number by 100, and that will ripple through to those following years, it will continue to drop. So this $2 billion that we started with in 2008 in the trust fund is dropping as we pay more benefits out to Oregonians. And so the 2011 and 12 number, which is the low point on here, will be lower. And when this number gets to zero is when states start borrowing from the federal government to pay unemployment insurance benefits. The issue right now across the country is there's already states that are at zero here, and they're borrowing money to pay benefits. Right now they've borrowed about $14 billion, and there's 22 states that are borrowing. The projections are that by 2010 there will be 35 states borrowing. By 2011 there will be 38 states borrowing. And by 2012, there will be 40 states borrowing. We're not running a projection here that would show us borrowing, but it does depend on how long and how deep and how slow the recovery is in terms of jobs coming back. And we've heard a number of economists, as you have too, and they all have a little different story, but most are along the lines that this will be a slow job recovery. So we expect this to be a three to five year time period before we have employment return to the levels we saw before the recession began. So those are, Oregon is definitely in a position that many states aren't, in that we have a solvent trust fund, and the tax rate that employers, when going to tax schedule 6, if Tom will put up the next slide,
Mr. Chair, question?
Yes, Representative.
Maybe before you go to that next slide, I have a question. Tom, do you have a statistic for 2007-831 balance? Just for retrospect? Because our economy started going down before 2008, so I just wanted a relationship.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Holby, my staff do a great job of giving me stats when I walk out the door. That is one they didn't give me, so I will get back to them. I have gobs of numbers, but I don't have the trust fund balance in 2007.
I'm lucky.
Tom, just get it to Teresa and we'll get it.
I have one other question.
Yeah, please go ahead.
is there anything, other programs or any other thing that's accounting for the drop in those balances? Is it all benefits being paid?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holby. Well, understand there's money coming in from employers that are paying in. They're paying their taxes on their employees, and then there's money going out in benefits. So this is a balance between those two cash flows in terms of how much is coming in and how much is going out. And we're in tax schedule 3. So that's on the low end of tax schedules. So we have less revenue coming in.
I understand
out.
That. My question
but
was...
But it is just benefits being paid versus revenues coming in.
Okay, thank you.
So,
go ahead, Tom.
The next slide basically shows you which tax schedule Oregon businesses have been in over a 20-year time period. And this system was put into place by the legislature in the 1970s. This tax schedule, the taxable wage base, and how the businesses pay their taxes. It is a system that served Oregon well and that we've had this solvent trust fund. And if we're sitting in tax schedule 3, so if you think about it, last year at this time, this was before the recession really hit hard, we set this at tax schedule 3, so it's been on the low end for businesses this whole last year because it's good for the whole year. What we're doing now is we're setting that tax schedule to move to tax schedule 6. That's a 40% increase in the tax rate between those, that jump equals to businesses. So,
Lori, on that, are you statutorily bound to stay in that schedule throughout the entire fiscal year?
Yes.
Okay.
It's set in January, and that's the schedule for the whole year.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. But I think when you talk to businesses in your area, you'll find out that 30 or 40% increase, they are laying off people about 30 or 40%. At least they are in my area. Every business that I talk to has laid off at least 30% of its workforce, and that fits.
Oh, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, so we're going to go from tax schedule 3 at 1.97% rate up to the 2.76%, and that's on the taxable wage base of $31,000. The first $31,000 is taxed and paid into the fund. So, and if you'll notice on this schedule that you have times of recession and you're paying out a lot and the ending balance in the fund is dropping, and then you move up to the higher tax schedules and you stay there for a while, and that is, it lags the recession typically. You're coming out of the recession when you move up to tax schedule 6, 7, and 8, and so times are better and there's more ability on the business side. That's how these have worked if you look at how these tax schedules have happened over time. So that is the situation that we're in right now and how this statute requires us to manage the trust fund. And with that, Mr. Chair, if there's other questions, Tom and I would be happy to answer. This information will go out to businesses shortly.
Any questions? Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I'm just wanting a little clarification. Just looking back on, you don't have page numbers, but it says UI benefit programs, and it lists about almost, well, if you total them, about 99 weeks worth of benefits, but I doubt that's really how much people get. How much does a person get? How do you figure out? I'm just wondering what the average unemployed person gets who's unemployed for the long term. How many weeks of benefits?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thatcher, you ask a question and that many folks ask because these are multiple types of programs with different requirements on each one of them. And so people move through these based on what they're eligible for. I'm going to let Tom give you a more detailed answer, but you may have constituents and we have phone calls also regarding that. So that's a typical question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thatcher, again, that is a great question. What today, as of today, an individual is eligible for up to 79 weeks. That's the first three programs I listed there. It's 26 plus 33 plus 20. As of Sunday, October 4, we're throwing in an additional 13 weeks, so that'll take us to 92 weeks of benefits for those that would go on the Oregon Emergency Benefit Program. This bottom 6.5 weeks is what would probably not be in addition to these other extensions because those extensions wouldn't be in play when that extension comes on. So probably the most someone could receive right now congressional action notwithstanding, is 92 weeks.
Okay, thank you.
That's getting close to 2 full years.
Yeah.
I don't know who thought up this system, but I could kiss them right on the mouth because it is a great system, and I'm grateful we have it here in Oregon. And because, well, I think the federal government should do is impose on those other states.
That did this.
I would call for order, but I think I asked for this disorder. Anyway, I think our federal delegation should look into this and say, look, you know, you states better get your act together and do more stuff like this. So, because we're not bad at, the state of Oregon is not going to benefit from all that money going out to them states. And I think we're kind of
Mr. Chair, that's a question on our minds.
Mm-hmm.
And the other states that, you know, they said 40 states will be borrowing by 2012. So the minority group is going to have had solvent trust funds, mm-hmm. very few states. Right now, these states are borrowing with no interest required. That was part of the ARRA legislation, is they can borrow without having to pay interest. So if we get up to $90 billion in borrowing, you know, how are states going to manage themselves out of that is a really significant question. Many of these states have taxable wage bases that are at $7,000 or $8,000 instead of on the first $7,000 or $8,000 instead of 30 some. So, you know, we did do this correctly in Oregon. I had a delegation here from China 2 weeks ago, and one of the things they were looking at while they were here was how we managed our unemployment insurance. They specifically wanted to know about this structure and how it worked in Oregon. So it's been a model for other states to look at, and I think other countries look at it too at this point. So it has served us well, but how does that sit with other states? Big states like New York and California and Texas, who are all borrowing right now in significant amounts.
Yeah.
So they're supposed to pay it all back, which would mean they would have to have a surcharge on their businesses to dig themselves out of the hole at significant levels in order to refund their balances.
Hmm.
So
any further
it'll
questions?
It'll be an interesting federal, I think, challenge.
Right, I think so. Representative, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Warner, does it, in fact, happen pretty frequently that we, the states that have a good system, and the states that does not have such a good system in place, are they continually borrowing, or is it just this is an anomaly?
Mr. Chair, Representative Esteval, this is an unusual time. Various states have borrowed because they've had economic downturns in their particular regions of the country. But if you that chart that I showed you with the unemployment rates, folks that are still are at 8 and 9 that we're considering low, that's significant for them. So Tom's got a 30-year history, so I don't know if he has more detail to that, but.
Mr. Chair, Representative Esteval, it is interesting. The last recession in 2002, 3, and 4, there were 9 states that did borrow, and they're the same states that are borrowing now. I listened to an economist who watches the trust funds at the federal global level speak last week, and he's calling this the perfect storm, especially when you think that, you know, 2004 to 2008 is not a lot of time for trust funds to rebuild, especially in systems where their taxable wage base is still $7,000. I'm just going to say it. California has a $7,000 taxable wage base. There's no possible way you could ever dream of paying the unemployment insurance benefits they're paying at 12.2% with that kind of a wage base. The recommendation is clearly to index your wage base to your wages. When wages go up, the wage base goes up with it, so you can have funds at the end of the day when a recession hits. So there is some history with some states borrowing. To be honest, though, the borrowing that's going on now has not happened since the 80s recession, when you saw that same spike in the 12% area in Oregon. That's the last time that we really borrowed. In the mid-70s, the recession in Oregon led the legislature in Oregon to say, enough, we had to borrow then. We were never going to borrow again. And so that session, 1975 legislature, figured it out. And There was a conference call, I just have to brag, about Oregon. The federal government put it on, and they said, if you want to look at a tax system, look at Oregon.
Well, you're right. Thank you. Any further questions of these good people? Well, keep up the good work. It's nice to see a shining spot in government. You know, them Californians want our electric ratepayers to tear them dams down in Klamath Falls area, too, because they're not going to pay for it. But that's a different committee. So, okay.
Thank goodness.
And I agree with you.
Yeah, amen, brother. So, I guess we'll just go move on to our next one then. Thank you very much, folks.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. We're going to have one on workers' comp rates. And Lou, you want to come up here, Lou Savage, and your posse there? Oh, and you know, Teresa, did we announce we're not going to do a rule review? If there's anybody here that wants to listen to that.
I was looking at the audience. I don't listen to there anybody's here for that.
No one was here for the last part on the agenda, are they, for the rule review? We're not going to have that work session today, just in case. Okay. All righty. Go ahead, Lou, whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Lou Savage. I'm the Senior Policy Advisor with the Department of Consumer and Business Services. With me today are Sherry Sundstrom and Lon Holston. Sherry is one of the management representatives on MLAC, and Lon is one of the labor representatives on MLAC. You have on your committee a former member of MLAC, I think twice. A member of MLAC. I don't know how many years Representative Witt had on MLAC, probably too long for his liking.
Too many.
They were not on the agenda because we weren't sure which MLAC members would be able to attend today, but they really are the stars. I'm just kind of the administrator, air traffic controller for MLAC. I wanted to talk to you about two things. The first, very briefly, I think most committee members probably know, but we just wanted to bring it to your attention again, that the workers' comp pure premium rate will decrease again this year, 1.3%. We are very proud of this. It will save employers about $18.1 million. The rates have been decreasing for several years, and we think it's a real credit to the system. We've talked about what those elements are, and I would say kind of four major elements. One is that safety and the commitment to safety that both labor and management have has been terrific, and it shows in the injury rate, the death rate. I mean, all injuries and deaths are unfortunate, but we certainly have been on the downward trend for many years. So that certainly affects rates. Our back-to-work programs, I think, have been pretty successful, and Sherry's been very involved in that with her work at Hoffman. The medical technology has really increased and improved a lot over the years. There's much more of a kind of sports medicine philosophy towards getting workers back to work. Rather than sitting in bed and waiting for the injury to heal, just like in sports medicine, the idea is to get people up, get them moving, and that really improves the back-to-work time, and that was a big expense in the system. And then finally, I would say the stability of the system has been very important for insurers and rates. That is, there haven't been really big swings in benefits and other aspects to the system, which creates a lot of instability. And that's a sort of a segue into MLAC. We think that MLAC has played a major role in that. I think, as most of you know, the Management and Labor Advisory Committee is a statutory committee appointed by the governor, confirmed by the Senate. It's made up of both labor and management. And although in the past there's been discussions about expanding that committee to include attorneys, doctors, insurers, we think that the composition of MLAC is very important to the success of the committee, and that is the two beneficiaries to the workers' comp system are the folks who are at that table. Stakeholders participate in hearings and in, you know, work groups, but the actual beneficiaries, the workers and employers, are the ones who make recommendations to the legislature and the governor, and we think that's very important. We have our folks up for confirmation in the Senate this afternoon. We're expecting all of them to be confirmed. There's a new member who we expect to come on, Pam Rona, who is not on the letterhead, who is a policy person with the Oregon Healthcare Association, an association that is made up of healthcare, senior homes, nursing homes, assisted living, and that's a sector of the economy that we haven't had represented on MLAC before, but it's a major employer, and there's certainly a lot of issues involving healthcare workers, injuries, and other issues that come up in the workplace. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Sherry and Lon. We have three subcommittees that are working on issues that either came out of the legislature or MLAC identified as issues that they ought to work on in the interim. The two major tasks that MLAC play, two tasks that MLAC has, are to review legislation prior to and during the session, make recommendations to your committee and the Senate committee and the legislature as a whole, and make recommendations to the governor as well. And then in the interim, work on projects that take a more long-term view of an issue, and sometimes getting ready for the session if legislation is required. So with that, I'll turn it over to Sherry.
Hi, my name is Sherry Sundstrom. I am an employee of Hoffman Construction, and I have served on MLAC for 9 years, and I've been the management co-chair for the last 4 years. During this last during the last session, we brought to you many bills. Two of the highlights that I'd like to point out are the death benefits, this Senate Bill 110, wherein we increased the death benefit to survivors of workers who have been fatally injured on a job site. And I take personal pride in that because I am in the construction industry, and I've had to respond to fatalities. And so to me, I chaired that committee, and I put a lot of personal passion into it, and I'm very proud of the product that we presented and that moved forward to the governor's office. The other bill was the cancer presumption of firefighters, and as you'll recall, this added 12 types of cancers to the presumption list for full-time firefighters, which was also a very good bill. And in the interim, we do a lot of work. We're not sitting idle by any stretch. And as Lou indicated, many of us attend the rulemaking advisory meetings for the bills that were passed out of the last session to make sure that the intent of MLAC is carried through and we don't have any confusion once the rules actually come out, and that we end up with just as excellent of a product as we went in with. I personally am sitting on one committee that is going to be looking at the notification of injuries or occupational disease claims to employers. So we're just in the fact-gathering process right now, and so hopefully by the next session, if we're going to do something, we'll have something fruitful to present to you at that time. Thank you.
February?
Good. My name is Lon Holston, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I want to thank you today for allowing us to come up and testify in front of the committee. I, too, am very proud of my participation on the committee. As you all are aware, that it takes trust and relationship to make a system work at the MLAC level. And only through that trust and relationship have we been able to move a different agendas and issues forward that have been recommended to us through the legislature, or where we've initiated it on our own, trying to find ways to streamline the system and deliver the best possible medical delivery system and benefit system to injured workers, and try to reduce the cost of the employers and the insurers. We felt, as a committee, that that was a very important premise for us to follow and always keep in the forefront of our deliberations and trying to streamline the committee. In that process, we've looked at the interpreter issue and when, where, and how, and why we use interpreters. Because we have a certain amount of the workforce that does need to have interpreters within the system, whether it's in the legal realm or the medical realm. We felt that it was important to take a look at those issues on where and when those folks were needed. We also looked at, while we've asked many organizations to come forward, whether they were injured workers, the medical community, state agencies, or what have you, and we've had a lot of folks testify in front of us, and we're still in the fact-finding stages. We haven't drawn any conclusions as of yet. We have noticed, however, that there is other state agencies that have systems in place that are very good systems, and so we want to be careful that this subcommittee doesn't, so to speak, run afoul of those systems or implement or suggest something to the legislature that doesn't dovetail neatly with those. We're not there to invent a new system. We also have talked about volunteers, and I'm on the volunteer subcommittee. We've talked about who and who these folks, what type of work they do, and whether or not they should be covered under the system. We have looked at whether they're volunteer firefighters, whether they are search and rescue, whether they're working state fairs. Who are these people, and what do they actually do, and what is their risk of being injured on the job, and how they're able to then either be covered or how, what happens to these folks if they are injured. So we've looked into these. We haven't drawn any conclusions there, but we also understand that we could run afoul of other systems that other state agencies are using and other insurance policies or programs that they're tied to. So we're real cautious and careful on how we're approaching this, and we're talking with other folks so that we all can come together and at least make a recommendation that the legislature can deal with rather than having a recommendation that's something brand new. So with that, I'm willing to answer any questions that you may have.
You know, I really like this coming here because it's another bright spot in government, and I really do like this system. And the but this governor made it very clear that he wasn't ever going to sign any bills on work relating to workers' comp that didn't go through MLAC, and I've, too, agreed to that because you guys do all the, wade through all the crap first, then bring us a good product, and it makes it a lot easier to pass legislation to help this system. But so keep up the good work. Any questions of these good people?
Just a comment, Mr.
Yes,
Chair.
Yes, please.
I'm glad to hear that workers' comp rates have gone down for employers so that they can afford to pay the unemployment insurance increase.
I know. Everything else costs money. So, Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to be brief. I first want to apologize for my delay today. I was testifying at the Multnomah County, East County Courthouse they're building out there. They're going to propose to build in Gresham, so it looks like we're going to be at some stimulus going there,
good,
which is great for the Rockwood area. But beyond that, thanks very much for the MLAC program and your service to it. I am a firefighter, and thanks to everybody on this panel and the legislative process. We were able to pass that bill, and you know, I'm proud to say a lot of firefighters getting screened right now, and so far a lot of them coming back very, you know, negative. But it was your work on that and your role that really brought all the groups together to come to a conclusion that here's a bill that we can move forward. And thanks very much for that. And I just really appreciate your work and everything that MLAC represents. So thank you so much. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Anything else? Okay, well, keep up the good work. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And let us know about the concepts and what's going on if you could keep us up to date on that.
Absolutely.
All righty then. Well, if is there anything else for the good of the order?
Mr. Chair.
Teresa?
I just want to point out the work session. We're not having the work session, as you may know. Legislative Council is going to be reviewing the permanent proposed amendment to the rule that they found to be adverse. OLCC is planning on meeting and on mid-October to review that. So if Legislative Council does find that the permanent adopted amendment is okay, then we don't need to review the report at all. But if we do, we'll do that at our November 18th hearing.
And if I'm not wrong, correct me if I am wrong, our schedule is kind of in flux.
Of what we'll be doing next.
Tentative, but we'll all be up to date before the day comes.
Yes, yes. I know that we will be doing an update similar to what we heard. We had an informational hearing at our very final hearing this last session from banks that have taken, state charter banks that have been taking funds from the Troubled Asset Review Program, or otherwise known as TARP. So we will be having that. And there's a couple other topics, depending on agency availability, that we'll have in front of us.
And if any of you have a personal bill you're going to do in February, let Teresa know if it's related to this committee so we can get going. And then committee bills have to be approved by the
Yes. And so, Mr. Chair, our deadline to submit that is next Monday. So I know we've sent out an email soliciting suggestions from committee members. So if you have anything, please either let Chair Schaffer or myself know.
All right. Anything else with the order? Very good. We are adjourned.